Welcome to the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm Laura Dearda, an editor with Becker's Healthcare, and I'm thrilled to welcome Chuck Cohen, Managing Director of Banco Dental. Chuck, could you please tell us a little bit about your background at Banco Dental?
Sure, Laura. First of all, thank you for having me on today. So I'm the third generation co-owner of Banco Dental. We are the third largest dental supply and distribution company in the United States. We've got about 1,300 associates across the country. We basically sell everything that you see in a dentist's office, from the chairs and the equipment, other equipment, to the materials and the gloves and office furniture. And we also do some design work and consulting along the way. And we pride ourselves on driving dentistry forward.
Fantastic. Well, we're really thrilled to have you and your expertise here to talk about the dental industry. What do you see as the biggest challenges for dentists today?
There's a bunch of challenges out there. So let's do the obvious one first. And that is the pandemic has certainly been a challenge for every vertical in healthcare, right? So the advantage of dentists, the advantage dentists bring is that in the early 1980s, late 1980s, early 1990s, dentistry really geared up about bloodborne pathogens, really to make sure that bloodborne pathogens weren't the source of disease. That was part of the AIDS epidemic back in the early 1990s. So dentistry really didn't have a big leap to go from fighting bloodborne pathogens to fighting airborne pathogens like we have in the pandemic today. Certainly one of the biggest challenges is, you know, the pandemic and recovery from the pandemic. And I don't think that's rocket science. I think everyone kind of recognizes that. And I think every healthcare is dealing with it. In addition to that, I'd add two. One is there's an issue around student debt in dentistry that seems to be particular to dentistry. So many, many dentists today are graduating with too much student debt, and that yields a lot of issues. One is that access to care is an issue for patients. The second one is we have a diversity challenge in dentistry. We just don't have enough minorities entering the profession. And those dentists that graduate with a lot of debt end up struggling for the first few years that they practice and have trouble opening their own practices. So student debt is certainly one of the challenges I would identify. And then the other one is the people in the practice. So most dentists today still work in an independent dental setting, a traditional dental setting where the dentist tends to be the entrepreneur and the practice owner. It's kind of unusual for healthcare these days for the practitioner to still be the owner of the practice. And with that, and like any small business, comes with a whole host of people challenges. Hygienists and office managers, hiring, firing. When I go out and talk to dentists, almost invariably, certainly the dentists who run their own practices, the number one challenge they face is getting the right people, keeping the right people, training those people, and making sure that the entire team delivers a great patient experience.
Absolutely. I think that makes a lot of sense. And especially as you mentioned, during this next year, recovering from some of the issues of the pandemic, you know, those things are going to be extremely important for dentists and dental practices to keep in mind. How do you see the dental industry changing in the next 5 years?
Dentistry is a really exciting profession to be in these days. I've always thought of dentistry as exciting. I'm a third generation dental person. Our company was founded by my grandfather in 1930. So we just finished our 90th year as a family business. And so dentistry is in our blood, and we are very excited to be able to serve the smile makers. And dentistry, the pace of change is going to increase even over the next 5 years. So I would identify three big trends that are going to make dentistry interesting and fast changing over the next 5 years. So the first one is we've seen a lot of consolidation and/or growth on the regional practice level. So what we're seeing is dental practices that are owned by entrepreneurs and generally entrepreneurial dentists, right? So they're dentists and they're CEO/entrepreneurs. They tend to be acquiring practices because they see a really interesting opportunity to leverage economies of scale on a regional level. So I'm not talking in this situation about organizations that are PE driven that might have 200 or 300 practices. They're out there and they're certainly doing well. But the exciting opportunity is dentists who find themselves as entrepreneurs with an opportunity to grow their practices. In many states, only a dentist can own a dental practice. So if you actually have some business savvy, you've got an interesting growth opportunity ahead of you if you're a dentist and you know how to operate a practice. So we're seeing a lot of growth in this area of 5 to 10 individual practices, usually within a geographic region of the United States. These dentists aren't generally looking to sell out. They're not looking to grow something so they can cash out later. They really are looking to build an operation that leverages the back-end expenses, so it lowers the cost to serve the patient, and at the same time delivers a really high level of patient care. So this first change that we're seeing is this regional consolidation trend that I happen to think is very exciting. I think it's good for the profession and good for dentists in general. Second thing is we're seeing a trend, and I think we will see even more of it, where more and more general practitioners will do a wider variety of procedures, right? So one of the things that makes dentistry different than medicine is that dentistry is very highly favors the general practitioner. So dentistry is about 80% general practitioner and about 20% specialist, which is the opposite of medicine. The medicine tends to be 80% specialists and 20% general practitioners or internists, depending on what term you want to use. So in the dental world, a general dentist is equipped to do any specialty procedure that he or she wants. Now, that dentist may choose to refer out some of the more complicated endodontic procedures or orthodontic procedures, but by licensure, a general dentist is licensed to do any dental procedure that's out there in the oral cavity. What we're seeing more and more, and I think it's going to accelerate, is some technology out there is enabling these general dentists to do even more specialty procedures than they were able and willing to do prior, right? So what we're seeing is this idea that we can package together a couple of electronic tools and allow general dentists to do more orthodontic procedures and cases than they would before, whether it's in aligners or some of the technology, some of the diagnosing technology that's out there. Same thing is going to be true of implants. So we're going to see more and more general dentists take on the challenge of implants as those procedures get easier. So that's the second change I think we're going to see over the next 5 years. And then the third one that is changing everything in our society, but especially will change dentistry, is 3D printing. So 3D printing, I think everyone understands the concept of 3D printing, right? So how does it impact dentistry? Well, if you think about the oral cavity, lots and lots of procedures in the oral cavity are involve making something, right? Making a crown, straightening the teeth, making fixing the tooth by adding some material, even using some of the stents and some of the guides that we use in dentistry. So the day of a regular dentist, a general dentist, having a 3D printer in his or her office and actually diagnosing, preparing, and actually printing and delivering a finished crown in one visit in a short amount of time in the dental office, I think is not too far away. And I think that's going to have a huge impact on the ability of the dentist to serve the patient and to really deliver a great patient experience.
That's fascinating to hear, and especially when you're going through and looking at some of the possibilities for dentists and for their patients, being able to have better service, faster service, and then really catering towards what people need, you know, when they need it. It seems like it's a very interesting space.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I'd add is that when you look at those three trends together, right, so this consolidation on the regional level, more procedures being done by the general practitioner, even some current specialty procedures. And the final one, this idea around 3D printing, you can see where they're starting to intersect as well. So a 3D printer can be an expensive piece of technology. And by making the practices larger and by being more regionally based, that enables the average dental practice to afford technology that maybe they weren't able to afford before. It also enables the dentist to learn more procedures and then deliver those procedures to the patients even better than they were before. So I think these three trends can actually work together and accelerate each other and make the practice of dentistry more exciting for the dentist and also deliver a better, lower price patient experience, which is really, I think, the home run.
Thank you so much for going through that with us, Chuck. Now, before we wrap up our conversation here, can you please share three pieces of advice for aspiring leaders today?
Well, I'm flattered that you asked that question. There was a time not long ago where I would consider myself an aspiring leader, but my hairline has receded too much for me to take on that role now. So I guess I'll try to give some advice or some experience that I've learned over the years to other aspiring leaders and for what it's worth. So I'll stay away from the from the obvious ones, you know, I think they get talked about a lot, and you can read about them at Harvard Business Review and other articles. But I would key in on three that I don't think get talked about enough. The first one is, I believe aspiring leaders really need to work on their communication skills, especially in writing. That's one of the areas I think that becomes more and more important today, whether you're communicating on Facebook or your internal email system. Leaders need to understand how to communicate difficult concepts in writing, how to communicate the why, how to make sure that everyone's aligned, how to build a great culture. And more, I believe that leadership is going to come down to how leaders communicate. And that is especially, it's true, of course, orally, but even more true in writing. We are doing more and more communicating in writing as a society, and aspiring leaders need to make sure that they have that skill. The second one, and I think you see it more and more these days, is, some version of ethics and authenticity. Authentically ethical is important. I think it's a little bit of a cliche, but people see through things more and more all the time. So making sure that leaders are authentic, are true to themselves, and communicate a level of authenticity to the people they work with is really important. And then the last one is, more and more we are all working in teams, whether it's a leadership team or just the general organization that we're trying to lead. And I think one of the undervalued and underappreciated skills that successful leaders have is the ability to build a consensus, right? So the idea, if it ever was true, that the leader just gets to bang his or her fist on the table and say, this is what we're going to do, we're going to move forward. I'm not saying that doesn't happen some of the time. And there are, those are the scenes that get captured in the movies when they're, the music comes up from the background and the leader just says, we're going to go in this direction. And everyone goes, we're in. And they all run screaming out of the room. That may happen once in a while, but my experience is it's more often about building consensus among smart, interested, engaged people, right? So if an organization has a good leadership team, the leader's job is to get the best out of that team by building consensus around sometimes difficult decisions. When the team has consensus, and they've arrived at a decision together, you're much more likely to get a better outcome when it's all said and done. Those are the three pieces of advice. Learn to communicate, especially in writing, and really make sure that's a skill that you have in your toolbox. Second one is ethics and authenticity. People smell through things even more these days than ever before. And the final one is to spend the time and learn the skills involved in building consensus among smart, engaged people.
Chuck, thank you so much for being here today. This has been a fascinating discussion, and I really look forward to connecting with you again in the future.
Thank you very much, Laura. I appreciate the time, and again, flattered to be asked, and congratulations on Becker's entry into the dental world.